Are you ready to realize the true potential in your life and help others do the same? Get equipped to create a thriving future with the Secrets of Success podcast. Inspire others to live, lead, and work on purpose, and experience the joy of watching satisfaction and productivity come to life. And now, here's your host, Dr. Ken Keyes.
Well, welcome, everybody, to the Secrets of Success podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ken Keyes. Well, each week we try to have guests that help us with our success in life. And today we have an expert. When we think about an expert on focus, but when we think about life, what is it all about? It's all these distractions and all these things that get in the way of our life. And I'm quite pleased to say that this individual is a friend. And I want to welcome Les Hewitt to the show today. Welcome, Les.
My pleasure, Ken. Great to be here.
Before you introduce yourself, Les is a best-selling author of, you know, The Power of Focus. He has worked on this throughout his lifetime, has co-authors like Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield, really has been in the professional development field for many, many decades. So, Les, you know, to get the audience to know who you are, is Les, what's your background? What's your journey into this space?
How far back do you want to go?
We can go, well, you have a bit of an accent, so, well, at least for me, I mean, this is a global podcast, so maybe it's not an accent for others, but
yeah.
You're now in Canada.
Well, let me give you the quick bio, but starting, I was born and raised in a very quiet little place, you're right about the accent, called Belfast in Northern Ireland, and in the 70s, it wasn't such a peaceful community. The troubles were at their peak. And, you know, I was interested in traveling and going to other places. And I was very fortunate to get an offer to work in Canada, in Calgary. And actually came straight here, you know, right out of Northern Ireland. I actually was working in the wrong job at that time. I left school. I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do.
Right.
My dad said, forget college and university, too expensive. And I ended up, he got me a job actually in the local hospital. I ended up studying medical lab technology, ended up as a lab tech. My two worst subjects in high school were math and science, so that tells you how great a choice it was. And I actually worked 6 years in Calgary at the old General Hospital here, and I ran the hematology lab. And then I met that wonderful man that you're aware of as well, Ken, Jim Rohn. And I was actually working part-time in a direct sales company just as another opportunity part-time. He was the trainer, and he just absolutely became a fantastic mentor for me. So I got very, very interested in personal development, professional development, started my own company, Achievers Canada. We probably were the biggest seminar company in Western Canada for 12 years, did over 450 major events with more than 100 of the top experts and speakers from all over the world. And that was like a free MBA plus for me.
Right.
And from that, I went on to start coaching groups of my own, ran that for about 12 years. I seemed to go in 12-year cycles and did that all over Canada and into the U.S., And then I started writing books, you know, so we've got 6 books in the series now, The Power of Focus. I'm just starting into another one in the next couple of months here. It'll be a different book. And I get the opportunity to speak, you know, I've spoken all over the world and enjoy that part of it as well. And I'm also coaching business owners one-on-one. And that's just a fairly new situation for me, but I'm really enjoying that, Ken. It's a great challenge. It's inspiring, and you know, you can actually see results. I work in a minimum of 1 year with them, and usually it ends up multi-year deals. But yeah, that's a quick history, and you know, I love creating products, and we just finished a 6th video pack there a couple of weeks ago. So I'm just always interested in, you know, creating and developing and helping as many people as I can, as you do too.
Well, thank you, Les. And, you know, of course, we got to know each other, you could believe it, is 1985 is when I came to the Ed Foreman event that you were hosting. Mm-hmm. I believe it was in Emerald Lake, just a few
That's
hours
right.
out of Calgary. in the province of British Columbia. So that's how we got to meet, and then came back again, and then sort of connected at various times. And then you graced yourself to one of our certifications here a few years ago, and some of the work that we're doing and how that supports coaching and individuals there. So it's just a privilege to call you a friend and a colleague. And you know, less today for the listeners, really want to go as deep as we can around your work, around focus. But before we get into it, and you're now coaching, you know, business owners or individuals or entrepreneurs one-on-one, you know, when you're thinking about individuals generally, and you have, and Jim Rohn, I mean, as you have said, probably one of the wisest individuals that ever has been in this space.
Exactly.
And so grounded, so centered. What I really appreciated about him, and I met him a couple of times personally, is that he was just a humble man, and just very gracious with it, but just very wise. He was not, you know, a rah-rah kind of speaker. He just had this conversational style with such rich content. But, you know, you were exposed to many dozens of professionals as far as working with them. When you think about people in life today, and you were to kind of summarize it, what are the two or three things that people are doing that's really contributing to their failure? We'll go to the other side of the coin here in a bit. But what is it that people are doing it's just not clicking for them? They're struggling, or they're not realizing their purpose or their potential. What are some of those things that you've, in your experience, you're 40 years of this space here, nearly. What is it in your experience?
Well, there's a couple of things that come to mind right away, Ken. One is a lack of clarity. And I mean, I'm talking about myself here in the early days. I really didn't know what I wanted to do, and I hadn't any big goals set. So I see this a lot, even with, you know, experienced business owners. When you get down to the deeper questions about what do you really want, they'll give you a general description, basically, but really they really haven't nailed it. And, you know, I often say to people, look, if you're not clear about something, go and take a weekend away and really go think about that. Just take a big notepad or your iPad or whatever you use. And that's 2 days to help design your life. And I find if people, you know, the excuse I get the most is, oh, I'm too busy, I can't do that. Well, you're too busy to design your future, basically what you're saying. But that lack of clarity is a big one. And then the other one, of course, you know, especially for entrepreneurs, and I include myself again, we get distracted so much. And it's those bright, shiny objects that keep showing up that looks like another great opportunity, and off we go, you know. And we're down the road on a path that's really not leading to anything that's moving us forward in the direction that we really want to work in. I call these magpie moments, you know, the magpie birds. They see those bright, shiny objects, and they'll grab it and fly off. And that's what a lot of my entrepreneur clients and people in our audience it's probably the number one issue, which, of course, goes back to the power of focus. It's a lack of focus that really it keeps them away from achieving the things that are most important to them. And I'm not just talking about their business or money, but it's the bigger picture. It's their personal life, their friends, their family, their health, and so on.
And a lot of that just is happening by accident, not intentionally. And less if we think about it. I mean, both of us have been in this industry for a while now. Just think about the level of distractions that are now in our space that weren't there 30 years ago. As far as, you know, social media and the Facebooks and LinkedIns and, you know, if it's Instagram, whatever it is, just how much pieces of input are flying in our space now versus where it was before?
Well, you know, because we're bombarded every day, Ken, and, you know, I don't think there's anybody immune to that. And again, it comes back to distraction. You know, one of the worst things you can do, in my experience, is actually to start your day opening emails. I mean, if you want to get distracted really, really quickly, that's a fantastic way to do it. And that's just one, you know, small area. Another thing I see is people with big to-do lists, and the to-do lists don't work. You know, but they don't get everything finished on their to-do list, usually because they've got far too many things on it. And that creates, you know, like a rollover every day. So, they have their list. They don't get some of the important things finished. They roll it into the next day, but they've already got a list for the next day, and they carry that on through the week. And then, unfortunately, what I see happening, Ken, is, they're taking work home at night, or worse, even on the weekends. And, of course, that just screws up the family schedule, and all sorts of issues occur with relationships just over that simple process. Oh, and there is a better way.
There is a better way, and we'll get that get to that in a moment for the listeners. But I have to share this, Les, I said this in a previous podcast, but it wasn't recently that the new CEO of Yahoo, she was raving about how she was doing 130 hours a week. And she was on her iPad doing emails about an hour after the birth of her child. And really talking about this as a badge of honor. We're really screwed up when we get to that point.
Yeah, that's pretty sad, I think. One thing I really enjoyed about my wife, Fran, and you've met her, and she's an incredible lady. But when our kids were born, she made the decision that she was, by choice, was not going to go to work. And her role was far more important as a mother in those formative years, up to 6, 7 years old. And I'll tell you, when I see my kids today, I am so thankful that she wasn't one of those people that was diving into emails, an hour after birth. I mean, that's just crazy.
So I just had to share it that, that's how far, people are at. And I think that's just, that's thinking that's just really not sound. Certainly, when we think about balance, in my new book, The Quest of Purpose, that really talks about it, trying to get clear about life as well. So when we flip the coin here, Les, and you're working with these individuals, one of the things that you say, which is also something that we embrace 100%, you said you need to play to your strengths and drop everything else. What do you mean by that?
Well, first of all, I think we all are gifted, if you want, with some strengths or talents. It took me a long time to figure out what mine were, and it was Jim Rohn who actually pointed me in the right direction there. I mean, my strength wasn't looking down microscopes, in a hospital lab.
I can't even fathom that right now, Les. I've known you so long.
it's another reason to step back and reflect. One of the habits I encourage people to do, it doesn't matter what stage of career they're at or what particular career they may be in or what age they are, is to take an hour even at the end of the week just for reflection. I call it the reflective hour. Just take an hour to jot down a few things reflecting on your week. What did you do well? What worked? What didn't work? Just 3 or 4 things and just really think about it. And, when you slow things down, of course, then you've got an opportunity to make changes that will work, or stop things that are not working. And I just find this is something, again, that people, the answer they come back with all the time is, I'm too busy. Like, I'm too busy to stop and think, which is ridiculous. But my strengths, at the moment, and I think this changes as your life matures and develops in your career as well. And currently I would say my strengths are, coaching would be one, obviously. Speaking and coaching would be together. And then creating products, which I really enjoy. I think your strengths are also very tied to what gives you energy, not what drains your energy. Mm-hmm. And I used to do a lot of things that just drained the life out of me. But when I'm just recently, like when I was doing, those 6 new videos for a client overseas, I just got super energized because I love the creativity of that. I love collaborating with the person who was helping to produce the videos. And, time flies. It's another thing that you'll notice. And you just get this great sense of energy. So that's one clue, I think. It's different for everybody. And, the other thing for me, speaking, coaching, and creating products, basically, those are my big 3, writing books. I didn't realize for a long time that writing was a strength. I just thought it was easy. I never thought about it. And then somebody said, well, maybe you should write a book. It never even crossed my mind. And then when I found I started writing it, I did find it easy to write. I mean, it still had to do a lot of work, and like you know that, the effort you put into putting the book together is phenomenal. But when you enjoy it and you've got the energy and you're looking forward to it and you can see a result that you get excited about, and again, that goes back to clarity. You know, I was just talking to somebody the other day, and this guy's in mid-40s, you know, the old midlife crisis coming up, and he just doesn't like his job at all. He works on the IT side, works with big companies, he's a consultant, and he's just not happy. And the environment he gets to work in, unfortunately, isn't a positive environment. It's very stressful. And then even worse, when he puts his ideas forward, often the ideas, you know, he spent months as a consultant working on, they just toss them out. And so there's no sense of accomplishment. So all those things come into play. But the number one thing, again, is everybody has got special talents. And it's a big part of your life to figure out what those are. And once you figure it out, then look at all the options you have, because, you know, there's more than one option when you figure out what you're good at. But that's just part of the process.
Exactly. Now, interesting, Les, this might be new information for you, but I was speaking at a conference here just a couple of months ago, and the professor that was presenting the closing keynote was talking about the reflective part of the brain, which is so important to the work you and I do, really doesn't come into development until you're 19 years of age.
Mm.
So those parents that are listening, or those of us that have cousins or nieces or whatever, they're around 18, 19, 20. You know, what the sad state, Les, is a lot of times is that the aunts and uncles are asking the 8-year-old, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? Well, I haven't reflected yet. And it's in that power of reflection that I get clarity about where, you know, who do I want to be. Now, your kids are getting a little bit older now, but just think about the last 10 years for them, Les, about how much clearer they are now, because they have more of their life that's been reflective and say, what do I like, what do I dislike, and what am I good
at? Yeah, we're excited our kids are, like, they are on their own path by choice. And particularly my son, Andrew, who you probably know a little bit about, you know, he's got his Game Changers 500 thing going. But he is just, you know, he has his vision. He's absolutely charged with what he feels is important for him to do with his life. And, you know, again, very proud that they grew up that way. And, of course, a lot of that is the influence that the kids get. You know, we've all had not so good teachers in school or coaches in a sports team. You know, Jim Rohn, one of his old tenets was, you know, surround yourself with the right people. And it sounds very simple, but that was one of the things that absolutely changed my life. When I figured out I'm not getting around the right people, people who've got influence, who could mentor me, who've got experience, people I could trust, who I respected, that changed everything. You know, and that's a choice. And you're right, it takes a certain age where you suddenly wake up, you know, to say, well, things aren't going the way I want. What am I supposed to do? And if somebody comes along who can give you that, you know, that different view of where you could be, or else sees the talent that you've got and says, you know, I think if you did more of that, your life would probably be happier and you'd end up doing some of the things that you'd love to do.
Les, that's such a good point. Maybe we can help the listeners right here and right now. Maybe I don't have this group around me that are pulling me up or mentoring me. What might be a couple of steps I might do, Les, to improve sort of this circle of influence or this association around me? What did you do, or what would you advise our listeners?
Well, you know, I'm a big believer in making lists of pros and cons. So that type of a list would be what's not working for me versus what do I want to see better? What do I want to improve? And then if you put the names of the people around you, like we're all surrounded by a certain group of people. And, you know, my experience, there's wonderful people work in hospitals. It just wasn't the career for me. And, you know, but I realized, you know, I'm stuck here. I'm in the wrong job. That's the whole thing. It's not the fault of other people. But, you know, other people just had a different viewpoint. I was starting to feel my entrepreneurial spirit starting to rise up. And, of course, everything changed after that. So, you know, I would go to conferences where business people were, entrepreneurs were. And, of course, having my own seminar program really helped. Some of my biggest mentors, obviously, were the speakers that came in. It was like a free university for me every month. And I had 3 days with these people, especially when I drove them in the car. I had Zig Ziglar, for example, you know, for 3 days, and half of that was in the car, one-on-one. So that's powerful. So I would make a list and really be honest, make a list of the people at the moment who you spend a lot of your time with, who are influential, whether it's positive or negative. And really ask yourself that question, are these people moving me forward? Are they a positive impact in my life? Or is it the opposite? They're holding me back. Or is it a negative energy I feel when I'm around certain people? And again, that was a big factor for me to make changes. And then the other side of it is, who could help me? Who could help me get to another level? Who could help me have some clarity in my life? Who could help me figure out what my strengths are? And see if there's any people that you're around currently that you need to spend more time with, basically. And it is all about making choices. And, you know, as far as mentorship goes, you know, if you want to be bold about that, you know, there's people out there very willing to help. And if you're just sincere about the help, you know, if I can give you a quick story here. It was one of my clients had a little trucking company here in Calgary. And he wanted to boost his company and make it much larger. And he said, who could I get as a mentor? And I said, well, who's out there that's already in a position where you'd like to be maybe in the next 3 to 5 years? Who's the king of the trucking business? And he came back a couple of weeks later and he said, I found a guy in Texas and he is the top guy. And I sort of instructed him to say, look, you need a conversation with this guy. And I would just ask him if he would mind mentoring you. And you're not in the same geographic territory. There's no competition that way. And so he made a phone call after he'd prepared a little script. And I said, there's two things are going to happen. You know, he's either going to say yes or no. But if you use this very simple script, and basically it was, you know, for example, hi, my name's Dave, I run a little trucking company here in Alberta, Canada, and I'm probably in a position like you were maybe 20, 30 years ago, and I've noticed how successful you've become growing your business, and I was wondering if you'd be kind enough to take maybe 10 minutes a month on the phone with me where I could ask you a few questions, because I would like to see my business grow as well. And it was basically, that was it. And this guy turned around and said, 10 minutes a month? Sure, I can do that. And the whole key was that he was really sincere on the phone. And I said, okay, now, 10 minutes is 10 minutes. So you better have your questions lined up. Maybe just 3 questions. You get 10 minutes and that's it. Well, what happened after a period of months was it turned into a friendship. And one day, Dave, the king of the trucking business in the U.S., basically said, you know, you're a good guy. You keep coming back and giving me feedback when I give you an idea, and you show me that you're actually testing these things, and I appreciate that. He said, why don't you fly down here and spend a few days at my facility and just take a good look around and talk to people, and if there's any way I can help you. And they ended up not just a mentor-mentee relationship, but actually, you know, it turned into a good friendship. Mm. And when Dave went down there, he saw a few things that he thought could be improved, and he was able to share his ideas, and, you know, so it turned out a real win-win. But it was as simple as saying, who do I need to talk to, and not being fearful that somebody's just going to say no. And if you do it the right way, I think you've got a 50% chance, you know, you'll get a lot of help that way.
Well, it's an interesting lesson. Thank you for that story, is that for those of us that have been around a while, there is a fulfillment where it's better to give than receive. You know,
absolutely.
There's actually science and research, and as well as being a principle that's been around forever. Research that proves that as you give, you actually feel better. The endorphins improve, your health, your immunity system goes up because you're able to help the individual. So I think one of the things you said, which you were very clear about, is to be sincere. You don't go in there and demand this from somebody. You just say, hey, listen, you know, I've recognized your success and somehow or other would love to benefit from that. So that's an awesome story, Les. You know, when we're thinking about playing to our strengths, you have a second part to your statement where you say, you know, forget the rest. So I started a business. You know, I've got bookkeeping to do. I've got this other, you know, I've got IT to do. What do you teach your colleagues and your business owners, entrepreneurs, and individuals, and say, well, you know, I still need this other stuff. What should I do here, Les? I'm just starting out. I don't have any money.
And that really is a big issue. And I know when I was starting out, it was difficult, but I learned over time, and again, observing other people that were running their business very efficiently, very successfully, you really do need to spend 80% consistently every week on the few things that you do best. So for me at the moment, it's like if I'm not coaching, speaking, and creating products, a large portion of my week, because those things give me energy and they drive my business. So I just, first of all, got to be very aware of that. There's a higher level of awareness once you realize, well, first of all, you can't do it all if you're running a business. And I attempted that for years. And I attempted to be a sales manager. It's the last thing in the world I am. And attempted that 3 times, and it just doesn't work for me. So what I do at the moment is, you know, if I have a project like writing a book, I'll have a team put around me, and I know the best editors and so on, and we'll have a little project for 3 or 4 months. And, you know, my goal, of course, is I do the research and I do the writing. And I'm involved in the other things, but, you know, we put a few cartoons in her book. The first time I attempted to find cartoons and get all the legal and the sales done and payments and everything else, it was unbelievable the amount of time that took. That is not a good use of my time. So I would pass that on to my assistant and just say, look, let me see some of the cartoons. I'll pick them. Then you go and, you know, do the deal, get them paid so everything is fine. And I would do that with everything else apart from the few things that I knew were most important to me. Now, it's easy to say that. If you're just a startup company, I think, you know, you've got to realize that a certain amount of work that you don't like doing, for example, administration, bookkeeping, that type of thing, well, when you start, because you've got not a big budget, you've really got to just roll up your sleeves and say, okay, 2 or 3 hours a week, this is a must. I need to do that stuff. But as you grow, you can get other people to do it. Now, when I was starting out after a couple of years, Ken, you know, I hated that stuff. I would just throw all the admin in a box. You know, it was that bad. I had no organization at all when I was starting out. And then my wife, Fran, told me, she said, look, we have a neighbor, a friend of mine, and she does bookkeeping. She works out of her basement, and she's worked at the bank for years, and she's really good at what she does. So I go over to her. Her name is Eileen, and I said, look, I'm just getting started here. Would you be able to do my books? And she looked at everything I was showing her, and she said, oh, this is easy. You know, that's just a few hours a month for me. And you know, I'm very budget conscious, and this was years ago. And I said, well, how much would you charge me a month? And she said, $100. $100 a month to handle basically all my paperwork. And she did my books for years. You know, so, and when you get a little resourceful and realize there are other people that actually love doing that stuff. See, I used to think everybody hated paperwork because I did. And she was almost salivating to get my book work. She just loved books.
Please let me help you with this mess that you have.
Exactly. She loved it. And I thought, my goodness, there's people out there that love this stuff that I hate doing. I better find more people like this. And it's the truth, they are out there. And I also believe in giving people a leg up. Like, I've got a 14-year-old nephew who's a real whiz with technology. And he's a bit of a videographer as well. So he was helping me out with the videos that we just completed. And he did a fantastic job. And he's 14 years old.
Well, I understand that with my kids. And, you know, some of these, well, it goes back to talent, right? So as a natural predisposition to be able to work in that space. And my son, who's a university person, is doing some videos for us now, too. And he's already much better three, 4 months into doing it full-time than when he was before. But he has an interest in it, like your nephew. So,
and the other thing, Ken, I think it was a big lesson for me. You know, a lot of us who won't let go of the things we need to let go of, you know, I was very much a controller. And every little detail had to go by me. And, you know, it took me a few years to realize, look, this isn't going to work. I've got to start trusting people who've got skills and let them get on with it. And if they make a few mistakes, that's fine. As long as they learn from the mistakes, we have a conversation. But I see controllers that just won't delegate. They won't give up anything. And the pressure they put on themselves, they torment themselves. Because they shouldn't be doing a lot of those things that really definitely are not their strengths.
Well, you mentioned less in the beginning of the show, your friend who's this IT person who comes up with these great ideas and then they don't implement it anyways. Well, that's disheartening for him, but think about all the employees that have opportunity to work, but they can't get their ideas implemented because they are not delegated the authority or the responsibility to do it.
Exactly.
So we're actually hindering the performance of our own team by being that way.
Exactly. You're holding them back. And then they get frustrated, and they probably aren't going to stay very long if they don't get a chance to show what they can do.
Yeah, what a burden that is for everybody. I want to go back. You made this statement that I need to spend 80% of my time on my strengths. How do you track that, Les? Do you do a time kind of schedule or log, or what do you do with that?
Well, years ago, I started a little system called a 7-day focus, and I believe in simplicity. I mean, if it's too complicated, I won't do it, and I know entrepreneurs won't do things that are complicated. And basically, a couple of the key things about that, Ken, is one of the worst things I've seen with people, why they don't accomplish what they're capable of, one of the worst things you can do is plan your day.
Oh, really?
And I know a lot of people gasp when I say that.
Well, I felt that all around the world just this very moment. Okay.
But, you know, I could give you stories all day about this one, but it's true. You know, we get those big to-do lists, and people are very reactive as well. And of course, there's got to be a better way. The better way is design your week instead of planning your day. There's a massive difference between those two things. And so our system is very simple. The very first thing you do on a Monday morning, or for some people it might be a Friday afternoon, that you take 30 minutes at the most to design your week. And so for me and the people on my team, when I had a full office of people, we would sit down for 30 minutes individually, and basically you made a list. You know, I knew what my three-month targets were. And so I would be looking at this week and saying, okay, what are my best next actions this week that will get me closer to hitting some of those targets? And they were not all business targets. There were also personal targets, even health and fitness targets, financial targets, of course. But that was the big question. What are my best next actions this week to get me closer to some of those 3 months targets? And so I would make a list and in writing, and there would be maybe 20 things, 25 things on that list. Some of those would just be phone calls or follow-ups or small tasks. But once I'd made the list, and our team did this as well, then I would look at that list and say, all right, what are the top three most important things on this list that must be finished by end of day on Friday? And that was the key. No matter what else, those three things had to get done. So then the next part was to say, all right, well, if those are the top three, I better schedule focus time for those three things on my calendar right away. Mm-hmm. And so I get my calendar, I look at the timelines. One might be 2 hours, one might be 3 hours or whatever, and I put those in the calendar, and it's called focus time. And that's a very important aspect of this, Ken. Focus time is when you focus 100% on one thing. And this is another reason why people get so scattered. They multitask. And there's so much, it's ridiculous, so much emphasis today on doing so many things. And if you can do four or five things at once, you're super productive. The opposite is true. There's a ton of research about this. One piece of information I found not so long ago was that when you get interrupted or you interrupt yourself from an important task, it can take you up this, but it can take you between 7 and 15 minutes to get your head back on track and get into that most important task that you were working on. Now, you imagine how many times you might get distracted every day. So focus time, and this takes practice. It's a habit risk that you develop. And so if I have a, I'll give you an example. If I, for example, you're doing interviews. If I was interviewing Jack Canfield, for an example, and it was a 45 to 60 minute interview, and I would schedule, say, 2 hours for that Thursday morning, 9 to 11. So in my calendar, it says focus time with Jack Canfield, 9 to 11. Now, everybody around me knows when focus time shows up on my calendar, it means I am not to be disturbed. No matter what happens, I'm not to be disturbed. So don't tell me there's a phone call. Don't tell me there's an email. You know, it's 100% focus. And the good news is you don't need to do this like 5 hours a day every day of the week. I'm just talking about your top three every week. And if you get those completed, can you imagine if your team was doing the same thing, that they just picked three things that was moving everybody forward to those bigger goals? And that's all they did. And do as much as possible with the other things. Imagine what the productivity would look like and the results would look like. It'd be phenomenal. So designing your week is really, really important, and it needs to be a habit. I would start with my team. Everybody would take the 30 minutes. We'd go into our boardroom, and then we made it accountable. So I would write my top three up and give the reasons for that, and then everybody else on the team would write their top three on the whiteboard. And then at the end of the week, we would just simply come in for a very quick 15-minute meeting, and we would put check marks up against the top three. And so if we had a really good week, everybody got 3 out of 3. So that was high five, celebration, terrific week, everybody. And of course, some weeks it was 1 out of 3 or 2 out of 3 for some people. For me, sometimes it might be 0 out of 3 because something happened and everything went sideways, or a genuine big opportunity showed up that needed my attention. But the good news is that you have a clean slate every week. You start fresh, and you go for your top three. But that simple little system has just done wonders for, you know, getting things completed.
So designing your week versus planning your day and really deciding in advance what the priorities are. But again, you have to make that list, don't you?
You have to identify
what's on that list.
And it's a habit, you know, but you've got to communicate to the people around you. And it's your own self-discipline. I mean, if you've got 3 or 4 blocks of focus time during the week to get those few top priorities completed, then, you know, you can't allow your mind to go wandering all over the place or diving into some of these bright, shiny objects or just allowing yourself to get distracted.
Absolutely. Well, you're familiar with our colleague, Dr. Marshall Goldsmith, right, and his latest book, Triggers. But one of the things that I included in my last book, which really kind of emphasizes this, Les, is that, you know, nothing happens without structure.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
you bring that planning mindset, and I plan several months in advance sort of when I can do podcast recording, such as we're doing today, and interviews, and try as much as possible to kind of have a schedule around it, because I need to keep up with the schedule. Once you create it and you have to do it every week, then you have to have these recordings. So, but it's relieving because I know that that's when we're going to do it. Then it also brings consistency into people know, okay, they know in our team that really Fridays and Mondays are the days that we try to do recordings as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays are off-site for working with clients. And so they just know that's kind of the rhythm of things, and that's how we set it up. And it's funny how you get that into a routine. And I'm a non-routine guy. How freeing a routine is to a person once you've
got
it.
Well, it is, and routines are very close to habits. You know, it's just not. But I really do believe in routines. And you're right, the rhythm that a team can get and the momentum that builds up when every week, you know, you're knocking off those top three things. And it goes back to clarity again, what I said right at the beginning, Ken. Mm-hmm. You know, you're getting clarity around the structure and realizing there needs to be structure for these things to get done consistently. And I think entrepreneurs especially tend to be quite scattered and reactive, and it's really difficult for some people to make those changes. But once they do, once they get into that rhythm or have a simple little system like the 7-day focus, then they see results. And the stress levels goes down, the energy goes up, the momentum goes up, and the overall results go up. Yeah, and usually that applies a lot to the bottom line of a business.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, no replacement for a sense of accomplishment happening and occurring versus being completely scattered and drained. And as you said earlier, the research around, there is no such thing as the ability to multitask. We can have multiple projects, but I can really only do, in fact, I can only do one at a time. One of the things you teach, Wes, you know, thank you for that, is around changing these bad habits. And so we've talked about that a little bit, but what would you say are a couple of the bad habits that people have to let go of, or the new habits they need to embrace beyond what we've already talked about?
Well, I think that's an individual thing. The first thing is to make a list. Just start, make your personal list. One of the most common ones, of course, is procrastination. And I mean, I've fought that for years. I'm not perfect by any sense, but I've improved a lot. And, you know, so good intentions really don't cut it. You can intend all day long, but if you're not actually doing something, it's not bringing you closer, you know, to getting the result that you want. And I had a very painful experience with this many years ago, Ken, and my dear wife, Fran, again, comes into the picture. And so the typical scenario would be I needed to get something done, say, you know, at a certain time at the end of the week, and I would just procrastinate and put it off and put it off and put it off. And then I got a panic going. I got a deadline by end of day Friday, and I'd rush into Fran and say, look, I haven't got time to type these things up. Can you type this thing up for me and get it out for me? And she would very diligently, you know, stop what she was doing, and she would help me with that. And this went on for quite a while. And then one day I did the same thing. It was 9 o'clock at night. And I said, Fran, I know I'm interrupting you and you've got other things to do, but like, I really, really need this. You know what she said? No.
Enough
and
of enough.
I said, excuse me? And she said, no, this is a bad habit. You do it all the time. And I'm the fall guy. I'm the person that has to bail you out every time. So the answer is no. And she stuck with it. And I didn't get it done. And that was a huge lesson for me. And again, I'm not perfect today, but procrastination is a killer of success and a killer of results. But, you know, the whole thing about habits is make your own list. Everybody's got their bad habits and they know what they are. And it doesn't have to be all business related. There's certainly personal situations. You know, financial bad habits are another huge one that I see. And you know, we go into all sorts of aspects of that, you know, where people's money goes and what they intend to do and how much they intend to invest and save, and it never happens. And they just spend. So make your list of bad habits. And, you know, the second part of that is to really be honest, be brutally honest with yourself. When you've made that list and you look at it and go through it one at a time, and you might have four or five bad habits there, but look at the potential consequences if you don't change this behavior. And I'm not talking like a couple of weeks or a couple of months down the road. I'm saying look a few years down the road. And for example, a bad health habit, you know, you eat junk food all the time or whatever it is. Look down the road 2 or 3 years, and there's some pretty serious consequences. And I think people need to be jolted into change. That was one of my great mentors, George Adair down in Phoenix, taught me that. He said, some people, like, you really need to smack them over the head with a 2x4 or something to get them to wake up. And the way you wake up is take an honest look down the road, and particularly financially. If you look down the road and you continue this behavior, what position do you think you're going to be in? Will anything be different? And so that's the first part of it. The second part then is to create your successful habit, which the good news there is it's very easy. You usually just write the opposite to what your bad habit was. So, for example, if somebody's not investing or saving any money, well, your good new habit would be start investing or saving. But then the second part of that is if you make this switch into a much more successful behavior, then what are the benefits and rewards that you're going to create? Maybe not in the next couple of weeks, but again, months or even years down the road, what will that picture look like? And normally, you know, if you're honest with yourself, the bad habit has bad consequences. The successful habit has genuine rewards. And usually that's an incentive for people. They will get motivated, you know, by doing that. I had a client, again, one of my coaching groups years ago, and he was 55 years old. He loved golf. He was a realtor, and he wanted to retire in the next couple of years. And his vision was to travel around North America in a beautiful motorhome that they were going to buy, he and his wife. His wife was a golfer as well. And I said, well, what's your bad habit? He said, my bad habit is smoking. I smoke a pack a day. And I said, how long have you been doing that? And he said, 22 years. I said, well, definitely it's a habit. And I said, well, what's the consequences? And he didn't even have to think about it. He said, if I don't stop smoking, I'll die. I mean, that was his exact words. And there were 30 people in the room. And everything sort of went quiet. And I said, okay, well, do you really want to switch this? And so I worked with him. And he said, like, if I don't stop smoking, I'll die. So we reframed that. And basically, his words were at the end of it, I choose to win the battle over smoking. Very powerful statement. I choose, my choice, to win. I knew he was competitive into sports, golf just being one of them, to win the battle. He realized it was a battle over smoking. In a month, he quit. And he came back to the next workshop, and it was just so powerful for him to realize, hey, this is my responsibility, nobody else's. It's not my wife's, it's not my doctor's. I'm the guy here that wants to have the great retirement and the lifestyle that I'm really looking forward to. And he'd quit, and he'd seriously quit in a month. And I find that when you change one habit, Ken, it's like a springboard into the next change and another habit. And here's the really big deal about this that I've discovered. If you're willing to put the effort in and get clear about your consequences, clear about the potential rewards and benefits of making those changes, if you just changed, or anyone listening here, if you just change three or four habits a year, and you did that over the next 2 to 3 years, you can change anything in your life that you're not happy with. And I mean anything. That's how powerful habits are. They are a really big deal.
Well, what we do every day produces results tomorrow, isn't it?
Exactly.
And I want everybody that's listening to pay attention to what Les just said. Is that you can transform your life one habit at a time, and you're not trying to do 12. You start with one, and you do that one, and you go to a second one and a third one. And like you said, if I do four, and I do four over 4 years, all of a sudden 16, and that is the core of my life, that's going to transform your life. You're going to
absolutely.
And people here that are listening, is that if there's something in your life right now that you want to change, then you need to make the choice to do it and to kind of work with it and create a statement, as Les said, that will be very positive for us. Now, Les, we're getting close to the end of the show, so and we'll get you to share your information in a bit. But before that, if you were to recommend just two or three things, you know, all the years you've been around all these great individuals and Jim Rohn and Ed Foreman and Zig Ziglar, and I know they had Mark Victor Hansen and Jack Canfield and individuals that, you know, I got to speak for Mark many, many years ago as well, is what are the two or three recommendations to me, I'm the listener, about what I need to do to change my life or just habits that are critically important that we haven't shared up to this point, or you want to just reshare them and say, if you do these three things, you're well on your way.
Well, the first one goes back to clarity. I mean, if you're not clear about the direction you want, if you're not clear about what's not working in your life, then you're probably just going to go along that path and nothing much is going to change. Mm-hmm. So taking the time to step back and really, you know, again, take a notepad and start scribbling, you know, what's working, what's not working, what do I want to change, What are the consequences down the road if I don't change? So, and another way to describe that, Ken, is, you know, there's certain levels of awareness that people have. When I started out, I had a very low level of awareness about business. And, you know, but you can change that. So the second step for me would be back to surround yourself with the right people. And that never stops. I think that is a lifelong exercise. And again, it applies to, you know, your dentist. I just changed my dentist. And, you know, I was with the dentist for a while, and he was pretty good. But he couldn't do, like, root canals or anything like that. If I got a serious thing, I always had to go to somebody else. And then I found another dentist who did everything. And actually the best person I've ever had. And so I describe that as create a fortress of brilliant people around you. Don't accept mediocrity in relationships. And don't accept average. Who's the best is the question I always ask. Who's the best? Who's the best travel agent? Who's the best doctor? And, you know yourself, in all professions, there's levels of performance and brilliance and non-brilliance and everything else. But that's a lifelong exercise. Build a fortress of exceptional people around you. And the third one, I think, is just, you know, life, as far as we know, you know, we get one shot at this. And if you're not having fun, whether it's in your business or career or job or even in your family, what's the point? To me, it's creating a quality of life that you can look back on and say, wow, that was some adventure. And we took the time for family and friends. We just, when we have traditions, that's the other thing I would suggest for family people. Annual summer barbecue with a whole family and extended family here yesterday. It's a tradition every year. We have four traditions. The summer barbecue, we have everybody over for Thanksgiving, everybody over for Christmas celebration, and everybody over for Easter. And those are four times. And I think that's kept our bigger family, extended family together, those traditions. And what's exciting, Ken, is that we see the kids that are now growing up through those families, and even our own kids, they're adopting those traditions as well. So there's a real quality of life around that. So those are a few of the things that, you know, I'd find have made a difference.
Well, thank you, Les. And I'll have some closing comments here in a minute. But, you know, thank you for taking the time to spend it with us here on the Secrets of Success podcast. Les, if people want to get a hold of you and find out more about your speaking or your coaching and or some of the products that you have available for them, how might they get a hold of you, Les?
Well, one of the easiest ways, just go on my website, leshewitt.com, and you'll find lots of information about coaching and speaking on there. I mean, if you do want to call me directly, you can reach me at 403-295-0500, and that's a direct line.
Let's spell out your website, is just make sure that we've got the right spelling.
Yeah, it's my name, Les Hewitt, LESHEWITT.com.
Well, thank you, Les. I sure appreciate you taking the time to be here. I've always appreciated our friendship over the years as we get busy and go in different directions as far as our family and maybe lose touch for a little bit, but it's always just a delight to connect with you. Today, everybody, so thank you, Les.
My pleasure. It's been a really enjoyable time, and you know, I wish you the best of success with the wonderful work that you're doing at CRG.
Well, thank you, sir. Well, everybody here, we just take the information that Les has shared with you. Get clear about your life. You know, just start developing the habits that are important. You have a choice. You have a choice to move forward. You know, Les's book, The Power of Focus, I recommend it that you would look at it, download it or order it, whatever version that's out there. And, you know, connect with him as far as some of the products and services that he has as well. You know, each week we try to bring you guests, and, you know, Les being a bestseller author and just breakthrough information. And so if you like what we're doing, then I just encourage that you would share, you know, pass it on as far as if you're in Twitter or Facebook or LinkedIn or any social media that you're doing. And do give us feedback about maybe there's topics that you want to hear about or more information or expanded information on some of the areas that we do on the show. Well, I thank you for listening. Thank you again, Les, for being with the show. This is Secrets of Success Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Ken Keith.
Thanks for exploring the secrets of success with us. If you want to keep the momentum going, log on to crgleader.com, scroll to the bottom, and sign up for our inspirational emails. You can also take your success to the next level by following us on Facebook and Twitter and connecting with Ken on LinkedIn. We hope you have a great week and look forward to you joining us next time for the Secrets of Success podcast with Dr. Ken Keyes.